The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Israel says the South African variant of the coronavirus may be able to evade some protection of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. While it has yet to be peer-reviewed, researchers at the largest healthcare organization in Israel found data that suggests that the variant is able, in certain instances, to break through the protection of the vaccine more so than the original strain.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. A lot of news from new variants of COVID-19 that might be able to break through that Pfizer vaccination, which a lot of people have gotten, to unfolding developments right now in Minnesota. And we'll bring you up to speed on all of that. So it's good to be here with you. Let's start with COVID-19. I saw a report earlier today, and I just want to bring this to your attention. Israel is one of the nations right now that's leading the world on vaccinations. You know, they have more of their people vaccinated than anywhere else. And basically, a majority of the population was fully vaccinated, but there were still people testing positive for the virus. So scientists there, they tested 400 of them, and guess what they found? They found they had the South African variant. And then additionally, they found that the variant almost targets those, you know, who are vaccinated. More than 5% of the vaccinated had it, you know, while even 1% of the unvaccinated had it. So why is that? You know, this is this variant is rare. You know, it makes up only 1% of the cases. Let me share with you what's being reported by CNBC News. I think this will shed some light on it.
In this study that you're talking about involved the Pfizer vaccine. I'm on the board of Pfizer, of course, and it was real-world evidence derived from Israel. But the study didn't say, I think, what some people are interpreting. What happened was they looked at people who had been vaccinated and who had become subsequently infected, and it was a small data set. I believe it was only 8 patients who had the 1351 variant, but what they found was compared to some controls or some matched controls, a higher proportion of people who had been vaccinated who subsequently got infected with the 1351 variant. It didn't appear they got very sick in the study. They just got infected with that variant. So I think it's intuitive that if someone who's vaccinated is going to get infected, it's more likely to be with one of the variants. That's the best you can conclude here. Also, one other key point which was left out of the analysis is that everyone who got the 1351 variant who had been vaccinated got the variant before they were fully vaccinated. So the infection had occurred before 14 days after their second injection. Nobody got infected with 131 after 14 days.
See, and I find that to be the most interesting point. So quick heads up for you there. A lot to get into today. Ed Marcy is going to be stopping by in a second. We'll get him on the air to fill you in on what's happening right now in Minnesota, what's happened in the hours that have just passed. Over the weekend, in one other piece of international news, there was a blackout at an Iranian facility where they were enriching uranium for making nuclear weapons. This is a story that has intrigued me. CBS will bring you this report.
Iran says an electrical blackout at one of its nuclear plants is an act of terrorism. Iranian officials confirmed the incident at the Natanz atomic facility on Sunday. The blackout came one day after the anniversary of the country's National Nuclear Day and after Iran announced it would expand its uranium enrichment centrifuges. No one was hurt during the outage. The U.S. is currently working with international partners to try and get Iran to rejoin.
So the reason that story intrigues me, you know, was it an accident? Apparently, no one confirmed it, but you know, all eyes are looking, all fingers are pointing right now at Israel as one of the possibilities who may be responsible for that disruption. And the U.S. under President Biden, as you know, is trying to resume negotiations with Iran on what, in my opinion, is it's a really bad nuclear deal. You know, we had reached that, of course, under the Obama administration. You remember what, you know, President Trump had done. Israel, on the other hand, is worried. They're very concerned about their survival because they know that if Iran gets a nuke, the first country to taste its hatred would be Israel, right? They want to wipe Israel off the face of the map, you know, off the face of the earth. The suspicions are that, you know, Israel, which is, you know, pretty decent hacking capabilities, they hacked into Iran's computers, targeted the power systems for that particular facility in order to disrupt the uranium enrichment. And it also happened, as you recall, you know, before with the old Stuxnet computer worm that Israel developed in order to disrupt Iran's nuclear work back in 2010. So we might be seeing them behind this again. I'm sure we'll find out in the not too distant future. But a lot going on in the country here, too, with just religious liberty. There's a there's one piece of news I want to fill you in. Comes out of the state of New Mexico. The governor there, Michelle Lujan Grisham, she signed a bill called the Elizabeth Whitefield End of Life Options Act. And you can tell by the euphemism that it's a bill allowing assisted suicide. That's a real tragedy. And I would ask you to pray for our fellow citizens in New Mexico. Let's pray for our country as we continue to go down this path that leads towards death, away from life, away from God. I think there's going to be a lot of consequences from that. I saw a report today in Catholic News Agency. I think that's where I'd seen this. And it was named actually for a state district court judge who died of cancer in 2018 and became an advocate for assisted suicide in her final years. And, you know, that makes the land of enchantment now the eighth state to allow for the killing of those who may or may not be dying. And as you know, you have California and Colorado, Hawaii, Montana, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. They're the other states, along with Washington, D.C. But, you know, fortunately, according to Richard Derflinger, he's a great pro-life advocate in Washington, they were able to actually thwart the expansion of their law to allow the diagnosis of mental health evaluations by non-physicians. And now, you know, that would greatly reduce or eliminate the waiting period, allowing patients time to reconsider and to provide for delivering lethal drug overdoses by mail or, you know, by the post office or messenger service. So, look, this is something that we're going to contend with, I think, for the years ahead. And we need to get this right. Unfortunately, I think too many states are going down the wrong path on this. And that's why I think efforts are important. That's why we talk about it here, too. Try to raise awareness. Try to educate you on the dignity of the human person, the value of life, and why these so-called people look at it as though it's merciful. These merciful acts, they're not merciful at all. It's quite the opposite of that. And it really is sad. Assisted suicide in our country is on the rise, and we've just seen another state succumb to that. One final note here, and then I do want to get your take on what's happening in the country, in Minnesota in particular, but there was a good piece of news. The Supreme Court delivered a victory, a clear message on religious liberty. Listen to this. You can hear this, the subtle negative tone in their voices that report this, but listen to this report. It'll lay it out for you.
A new victory for religious groups fighting for more freedom during the pandemic. The Supreme Court in a 5-4 late night ruling sided with a Bay Area Bible study group. It sued Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom over a COVID law that limits any private gathering at a home to just people coming from three households. Conservative justices found that to be unfair because hair salons, retail stores, and movie theaters, among others, can have more people inside. But Chief Justice Roberts sided with the liberals on the court, who noted the law applies to homes, whether it's a religious gathering or not.
Yeah, so it was a 5-4 ruling with Chief Justice Roberts dissenting. But he didn't join in the dissent. Justice Elena Kagan said that the state had restricted all gatherings in homes, both secular and religious, to just three households. It's weird, isn't it? Don't you agree? This is, for I think, the fifth time the court told the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that they were wrong to allow the states in their circuit to restrict religious liberty while allowing other things like commerce to go on. You heard in the report all the different activities that take place. But it's okay to target, you know, religious gatherings. So that ruling came in a case where California restricted religious gatherings in homes, to just three households. That's it. And again, a victory, though, for life. And let's hope it continues. George Floyd's case is underway as well. And I don't know if you've been following this or not. We are seeing, once again, chaos in Minnesota. But tangential to the Floyd case. I'll get into that too, and what's now unfolding and what we might see throughout the day today, maybe tonight and the days ahead. But for more on the George Floyd trial and what's been going on, let me share this with you, and we'll talk about what's now happening in Minnesota.
The medical examiner who performed the autopsy on George Floyd took the stand. Dr. Andrew Baker told jurors that while heart disease and drugs played a role, it was the interaction with police that caused Floyd's death.
The law enforcement subdual restraint and the neck compression was just more than Mr. Floyd could take by virtue of those heart conditions.
On the death certificate, Dr. Baker listed the drugs found in Floyd's system and heart ailments as contributing conditions, not causes.
Mr. Floyd's use of fentanyl did not cause the subdual or neck restraint. His heart disease did not cause the subdual or the neck restraint.
But during cross-examination, the defense continued to focus on Floyd's drug use.
You're aware also of the methamphetamine that was found in Mr. Floyd's system?
Yes. I'm not an expert in the specific toxicology of methamphetamine. As a general rule for forensic pathology, methamphetamine is not good for a damaged heart.
This was not a sudden death.
Forensic pathology expert Lindsay Thomas is a former county medical examiner who trained Baker. She testified Floyd died from asphyxia or low oxygen, terms not mentioned in Baker's autopsy report.
The activities of the law enforcement officers resulted in Mr. Floyd's death.
Meanwhile, Minneapolis residents are following the trial closely.
So that's that really is the heart of what is now going on in this trial. I heard that we may have a conclusion to the trial soon. We'll see what happens. We'll see how that all unfolds. But tensions are high right now, not just with what happened in the Derek Chauvin trial and the death of George Floyd, but what happened last night. And I don't know if you had a chance to catch the news at all today. If you didn't, another tragedy. Police shot, killed a black man. They had stopped for a routine traffic violation. It was an accident, according to the officers that were involved. I think the officer accidentally drew a weapon as opposed to a taser. What ended up happening, there was a man named, I think it was Dante Wright. He was in Brooklyn Center. He was pulled over, got out of his car. Apparently, I guess they were trying to restrain him. He got back in the car, tried to get away, and one of the officers was shouting, "Taser, taser, taser." And instead of tasing him, a single shot went into him. He took off, the car crashed, and he died. At a news conference this afternoon, I was watching it right before going to air here, the Brooklyn police chief explained that the officer apparently pulled the wrong weapon, and she told him that she was going to tase him, and you could hear that on the audio. Unfortunately, a shot went off. They say most officers are trained, and this is a side note, to carry their firearm on their dominant hand. So if you're right-handed, it's on your right hip. If you're left-handed, it'd be on your left, and then your taser would be on your less dominant hand. So, I mean, how do you grab your weapon if you're going for your taser? I don't know. But again, I'm not a law officer. I'm not in the heat of the moment where conflict is rising. That explanation, though, is probably not going to be accepted. Black Lives Matter, I'm sure, is not going to accept that. They're going to say, "Hey, how do you mistake those hands? How do you mistake your taser for your firearm?" So what ended up happening is a riot broke out in Brooklyn Center last night after it happened. And rioters, they targeted the city's police department headquarters, and they sprayed it with graffiti. But riot-geared police kept them from taking it over, as we've seen in other places. But it didn't stop there, right? The violence moved into Minneapolis, including the Uptown and Lake Street neighborhoods, where businesses and homes once again had been destroyed. And here's the deal. I mean, I have such an issue with this. I mean, the loss of any life is tragic. Any sort of police brutality or abuse, it's got to be called out, of course. We're all on the same page on this. But what does it serve going in, burning and looting and destroying innocent civilians, businesses, and communities? Does that make any sense? What message are you sending by doing that? I never could get my head around that. I'm all about peaceful protest. I'm all about having your voice be heard. There's no question in that. But to go to loot, to destroy, to burn, I mean, innocent lives can be taken in that as well. This shooting is, of course, impacting the trial of George Floyd. I mean, the attorneys for Derek Chauvin They argued for the jury to be sequestered after last night's riots, and that was a motion actually the judge denied. So a lot unfolding right now. We're going to see more of this in the days ahead, and I know Ed will be not only covering it for you tomorrow, but he joins us today. He's senior editor at hotair.com and a great contributor to this program, a great guest host here, and you can check him out at his website, hotair.com. Good to have you back, Ed. Good afternoon.
Drew, thanks for having me on, and I'm looking forward to subbing for you tomorrow, too, so thank you very much.
Yeah, you know, lots of news, right, from Iran and nuclear hacks to the Chauvin trial to what we are now seeing. I just watched the press conference before going live to air here, and you could see how emotional police chief was. Give us a thumbnail of what happened. I kind of did that, but he was pulled over in a routine traffic stop. Why were they arresting him, and how did things escalate?
It's obviously this is going to be the subject of a lot of investigation, probably lawsuits, and I'm guessing a prosecution here against the police officer involved. He was pulled over because there was apparently some issue with his driving or with the car itself. There was a predicate for that, and I'm not entirely clear on what that was. It may have been a registration issue. When they took his license, they ran it, they discovered that he had a outstanding warrant for a gross misdemeanor. And I've seen speculation that that was on some sort of a weapons charge. But at least according to the police department in today's presser, which I watched as well, it was a gross misdemeanor. Now, that's not a nothing thing, but it's not a felony warrant either. Mm-hmm. However, because you have an outstanding warrant, they wanted him to get out of the car so they could arrest him and detain him on the outstanding warrant. And he resisted arrest and slipped out of the grip of the officers there and tried to get back in the car. Apparently, he was going to try to drive off. And they played the body cam there, which is an unusual move. Yeah. And, you know, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension probably is not going to be very happy about this because they don't like to have that stuff out and about while they're still doing their investigation. But Tim Gannon, who's the police chief in Brooklyn Center, said, well, he wants to have full transparency on this. And you can see in the video, it's very, very clear that the officer who shot him is warning him that she's going to tase him. She warns him at least two or three times that he's going to be tased. And then she... and then she yells, taser, 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 which is the signal for the other police officers to let go of the guy and to clear the path for her. But the whole time you can see the weapon in her hand is a pistol and not a taser. And so once she fires the shot, she immediately says, oh, bleep, I shot him. Yeah. And it's clear that that wasn't what she thought she was doing. Nevertheless, intent matters in terms of what you're charged with, but this was not a person who was presenting a lethal threat to the officers involved. Lethal force shouldn't have been used against him. My guess is that this is going to end up being some sort of a prosecution on a manslaughter charge against the officer involved. Now, we don't know that for sure, and there's more that's going to come out, but that body cam is actually pretty clear that it wasn't intentional, but that this guy wasn't presenting a lethal threat either.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Tragic. I have to commend
tragic,
them for
absolutely
releasing.
Tragic, yeah.
Commend them for releasing the video though, because I think that could quell some of this. I understand it's not normal protocol, but when you see that and you hear the audio, to me, you know, that said, okay, I can see what happened, and hopefully, rationality will prevail, and we won't see more looting and arson and destruction in the city tonight. And I don't want to sound callous, and I don't want to sound uncharitable or unmerciful in this situation. Yeah. You know, my frustration is that these situations, almost all of them, and this could have been, this probably is a mistake. It may have been. I know a jury will ultimately decide that. But if this person just complied with the officer's wishes, none of this would have happened. Whenever you fight, whenever you flee, you know, if it's not the taser and the weapon is withdrawn or somebody else gets hurt and some other, I always have a problem with this. I mean, I teach my kids, an officer pulls you over, hands, you know, 10 to 2, and just yes, sir, no, sir, give them your registration, whatever you have to do, but comply. You can always resolve the issue later. We see this over and over again. What is it? And I don't know whether you see that or whether you think that's an observation that has any merit to it or not. But we always see these situations get exacerbated because there's noncompliance involved.
Well, I think in part that, you know, we have to allow for the fact that there's not a lot of trust anymore between police departments and some of the people that they're policing. And I think body cams eventually will resolve that because everything becomes a lot more transparent, as you just said. I think it'll make police officers work better. I think it will help bolster credibility in these matters when body cams show, you know, that people are speaking the truth. And with the officers knowing that body cams are operating at all times, there's, you know, they know that, that whatever's happening is going to come out if that's the issue.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, under the normal circumstances, you're better off complying. Even if you have an outstanding warrant, you're better off complying because things can get very bad. And I think that this is a type of very short-term thinking that a lot of people fall into. Also, sometimes the police response is similar to that, right? Because people who haven't gone through this type of situation or haven't gone through the type of training that you get don't understand how compressed and tunnel vision your sight becomes, but your judgment becomes, and how the flood of adrenaline really reduces the fine motor skills and the nuanced thinking and really bolsters the strong motor skills and the survival thinking. And so everybody involved in that there's some impact on everybody that's involved in that sort of thing. And so the best thing to do is to try to de-escalate as much as you can, as long as it's safe de-escalation.
And I agree. What do you think is going to happen tonight? Will Black Lives Matter be fomenting anything this evening?
Well, they're already protesting. I mean, the protests are ongoing. They're going to have a vigil tonight. Right after the press conference ended inside the police department, local NAACP held a joint presser with some of the activist groups in the community and saying that they're going to hold a vigil tonight. They want it to be peaceful. They want to put pressure on the police department and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to, you know, accelerate, obviously, the investigation. They want the police officer fired. That was a big point of contention in the press conference today, where the police chief was insisting you had to have due process. The mayor was saying, well, we're going to have due process, you know, followed by a first-class firing, basically. I don't know how you avoid that. Once you look at the video, I think it's pretty clear that that's the least of this police officer's worries is her employment status. Sure.
Well, I'll tell you that. Hang out for just a second. I do want to follow up on George Floyd. I heard that closing arguments are expected next week in the Chauvin trial. So we'll see what happens there. If you got a minute, we can talk a little bit more. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be stopping by as well. We got a lot to get into today, so feel free to join us if you want to get in. 888-914-9149. We're back with more right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
There is a stark new warning about changing the Supreme Court, and it's coming from one of the court's justices.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, a lot to talk about coming up in a few minutes. We'll dive into that. Will we see a change coming for the Supreme Court? And of course, we'll talk about baseball, politics, George, a whole lot more. Right now, if you're just joining us, we are taking a look at a tragedy that has unfolded in Minnesota, in a little suburb of Minneapolis, in Brooklyn Center. And a black man had been stopped for a routine traffic violation and was pulled over, resisted arrest. And the officer who was going to tase him accidentally, she claims, pulled her firearm and shot a single shot into him. He's dead today. Rioting has ensued. Buildings are burning. There's going to be more protest later tonight. And I just pray that peace will prevail. We're not going to see this destruction of innocent property. Ed Morrissey joins me today, senior editor at Hot Air and one of the great guest hosts on this radio program. And You could check him out as well. He fills in for Hugh Hewitt on the Salem Radio Network and does his own show, the Ed Morrissey Show, too, on Hot Air. So it's always good to share the mic with Ed. And Ed, of course, we're talking about what's up on happening in Minnesota. That'll be a story that I know you're going to probably continue to cover. But let's talk about Derek Chauvin for just a moment, if we can. I had read earlier today that closing arguments are expected next week in that trial. I didn't think it would come so soon. We had played a little bit of audio talking about the cause of death. There's a U.S. judge that's presiding over the trial, and he denied a defense request to sequester the jury after he said, you know, the closing arguments are going to begin next week. But after this riot and what happened, I thought, man, well, I don't know if that's going to taint people's view of police, or maybe not. I don't know. What's your thought of him not sequestering this jury in light of more unrest and the police being involved? And then secondly, how close do you think we are to the end of that particular trial?
Yeah, great questions, Drew. And first off, I think it's a mistake. I think it was a mistake not to have sequestered them in the first place. And, I mean, the defense wanted them sequestered right from the very beginning, and Judge Peter Cahill denied that request, saying, no, it can be managed, that, you know, it would be too much of a hardship for the jurors. Then after what happened last night, the defense renewed their request for immediate sequestration, and as you said, the judge denied that this morning. Now, since then, the mayor of Minneapolis has declared a curfew at 7 p.m. tonight. So, again, I mean, I don't understand how this isn't going to impact those jurors in some way, shape, or form. And I think that this is that any conviction that arises out of this, there's going to be a pretty good case from the defense that the jurors were tainted, if you will. By this exposure to different things that are going on, and particularly this shooting of Dante Wright. Now, is that enough to reverse a conviction? I have no idea. But, I mean, certainly it makes the argument stronger that the judge didn't take the steps necessary to provide Derek Chauvin with a fair trial.
So, you know, you've been following that case pretty quickly. Just final thoughts on it. How do you see Chauvin in that case? There's a lot of questions about how George Floyd ultimately died. What do you think is going to prevail?
Well, there's an awful lot of testimony that while there's some underlying issues that Floyd had, that what actually caused the death was the police hold. And, you know, bar exam questions, you know, yeah. Somebody who jumps off of a building and gets shot as they're falling, you know, is that murder, that sort of thing. There's eggshell skull example that's taught in law schools and that sort of thing. I suspect that what you're seeing here is probably a lot of police caused the death. I don't know how much they have been able to establish an intent or a underlying felony, which is required for second degree murder. Yeah. But I would not be surprised to see a conviction on either the third degree murder or the manslaughter conviction. Yep. Certainly on the manslaughter conviction, at least at this point. Now, we haven't heard entirely from the defense yet. They're going to be presenting their case fairly soon. They've been presenting their case all along, because when you have expert witnesses, usually they let the defense sort of do their thing with them at the same time, so they don't have to keep calling the same people back all the time. Right. But, you know, we haven't heard from the defense. The defense may have a really good reasonable doubt case, and so that might change things quite a bit. But, it's supposed to wrap up. Arguments are supposed to begin next week at some point, and at that point it goes to the jury.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. We'll follow that. And, of course, I know you'll be following what's happening right now in Minnesota. Hey, thank you for being here. Always good to talk with you, and thanks for sitting in for me.
Thank you, Drew. Great to be with you.
Look forward to talking. That's Ed Morrissey. You can check him out online as well. He's, of course, senior editor at Hot Air. I want to talk about another issue with you, too, and you're more than welcome to join us anytime. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be stopping by. Our number here is 888-914-9149. This weekend, there was a mega Zoom call. I don't know if you have heard about this or not. More than 100 CEOs of major companies around the country. And this should be talked about. You know, you should know about this. It was not a business strategy meeting. Mm-mm. Instead, it was a meeting to try and thwart the will of the American people as expressed in their state legislatures. And this is where we are today. This is what's happening in our country. And it all stems from the action of Major League Baseball withdrawing the All-Star Game from Atlanta. They moved it, of course, to Colorado because of Georgia's new election law. So the mainstream media, Yeah, if you've been following any of this, they've categorized that law as restricting voting rights, while it has actually expanded voter access on times when they can vote and other issues along that lines. And it has put into place a requirement for, you know, having an ID to be able to vote. And I'm all about having an ID. I think it's a good thing. Somebody sent me a meme. They listed on this meme all the things that you and I need identification for, from buying alcohol to getting on an airplane. I mean, they went through probably 25 different things. Why not have it to vote? You are who you are. You know, you can identify who you are. You can cast your ballot. They also put into place one other thing. I think it was the use of absentee ballots. But for some reason, there have been false reports. And the reporting is that it's restricting those rights, and, you know, the so-called woke elements of our society have responded in the same way that they're going to respond. At least three other states now are considering similar legislation. And it's not entirely clear at this point in time how the leaders of those 100 companies are going to react. So the whole All-Star game, you know, boondoggles backfired on Major League Baseball, because Colorado, they actually already have, they have voter ID requirements. And because the decision to move it only came after President Biden said something about boycotting the game. But there was a sudden reversal from the White House on that position after MLB made the decision to move the game. So a lot going on. I'm joined today by regular contributor Dr. Paul Kengor, a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. And we'll get his perspective on this. If you haven't read his latest book, it's called The Devil and Karl Marx. I'd strongly recommend it, one of a number of his great works. Doctor, always a delight to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Good to be with you.
A lot going on in the country, isn't there? From riots in Minnesota to you know, All-Star games being moved to, you know, the ever threat of changing the Supreme Court. Let's start though with I know you wrote a great piece too, and we're going to link over to that on what happened with the All-Star game. But tell us about the Georgia law. Does it really? And this is the essence of this whole controversy. Does it really restrict voter access?
Well, I mean, the goal of it is to expand voter access. In fact, there was a piece in the Washington Post, of all places, which did, you know, one of those fact check things, right, Drew? Yeah. And you know, they gave President Biden 4 Pinocchios, yeah. Right, for false statements that he made about the Georgia election law. And in fact, the Post even said that this is the Post, right? The liberal Washington Post said that the net effect of the law is to expand the opportunities to vote for most Georgians, not limit them. That's an exact quote. And something too, you know, liberals listening right now, remember this, please. It was Brian Kemp and the Republicans in Georgia that Trump voters were really angry at 3 or 4 months ago, because they felt that Kemp and the Georgian Republicans weren't fighting the Democrats, right? They weren't doing enough to investigate alleged improprieties or possible scandals or conduct or whatever in the Georgia voting law. So I mean, you Kemp and these Georgia Republicans, you know, these guys aren't exactly irresponsible, you know, reckless, crazy right wingers, and really, what they're doing here is akin to what Florida did after the 2000 vote, which is they're seeing all the trouble that was caused, all the havoc that was created, mass mail-in ballot, everything else. They're taking steps right now. This is, by the way, this is what every single state ought to be doing. They're taking steps right now to ensure that there aren't questions about election integrity in the future, you know, 4 weeks after the votes are cast. You know, this is the time that you do this. Yeah. So that, you know, that's what they're trying to do here. And you know, the opponents have labeled it racist, of course, all sorts of other things. Brian Kemp was on TV last week, and he said this, quote, "Georgia has 17 days of in-person early voting, including 2 optional Sundays. Colorado, which is where the All-Star game was moved to, Drew, right? Yep. Colorado has 15 days. And he said they also have a photo ID requirement.
Right.
He said, so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I've looked into what Kemp said there, and you can dispute some of the things here, some of the things that he says there. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, you need. To some degree, in some of what George is doing, they've been accused of being too lax. And I'll give you one example of this. Absentee ballots in Georgia can be cast without a photo ID. Without a photo ID. Voters in California or in Georgia, for absentee ballots, you can use a photocopy of a bank statement. You can use a utility bill.
Yep.
You can use a paycheck stub.
Right.
You can use the last four digits of your Social Security number. Several other added options. And get this, folks. Try going to your Major League Baseball ballpark, and when the guy cards you for an ID when you try to buy a beer, say, hey, you know what? I don't need an ID. Here's the last four digits of my Social Security number.
Yeah, right.
Here's a copy of my paycheck stub. Give me my beer, right? And go to the pickup window for your baseball tickets without a photo ID and see if Major League Baseball lets you pick up your tickets, right?
Yeah.
So this is Major League Baseball here has given in to a political debate that they have no part of, no knowledge of, no expertise of, and shame on them for politicizing America's national pet.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. I mean, as I said, somebody sent me I guess it was a rundown of when valid IDs are needed. And they said, look, you need them from everything from visiting a casino to buying cigarettes, to buying liquor,
yeah.
You know, to buying a house, sometimes renting hotel rooms, right? Buying a cell phone, entering federal buildings, you know, the list goes on. Some places want it for donating blood, you know, getting married. I mean, it goes on and on and on. You can go getting a hunting license, you know, transacting at a bank, sending a wire, boarding an airplane, driving. You need a license. Why not have a license to do something that has profound impact, and that is voting. We saw all the controversy and all the confusion over whether or not, you know, this last election, you know, was honest or not. To me, it's a no-brainer. But let me go back to this issue too, because the All-Star Game has moved, right? And here's part of the tragedy in this: small businesses in Atlanta, they're the ones that are going to get hurt, not these major corporations like Delta or Coca-Cola. You know, they're missing out. They estimated, I think it was $100 million in revenue. That's what it would generate for that area. I can't understand the governor or anybody in that state not wanting that revenue to come into their state. So what's that going to do for those business owners when they go to the polls next time? I mean, do you think they're going to remember? How will this impact them?
Well, that's what's ironic about this. So Atlanta, which has a majority black population, right? I mean, this is arguably the most thriving city in all of the United States of America for black Americans and minority-owned businesses. And now you have this boycott by a bunch of, should I use the language that the left uses? By a bunch of white guys up in New York City and Manhattan, up north, a bunch of Yankees. Right? And they're going to cost African Americans in Georgia literally tens of millions of dollars. This is going to be economically devastating to black people throughout Atlanta and the entire state. And by the way, Stacey Abrams, who fed a lot of this by characterizing it the way that she did, she's really backtracked now because she realizes, oh man, I didn't want this to happen, right? We're trying to caricature this in a way with a political narrative that helps us, the Democrats, against our opponents. We didn't expect Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball to boycott our state, but that's exactly what's happened. And they move it to, again, if they want to play this racial identity thing, they move to Colorado, which is considerably less minority black, right?
Yep.
And this not only hurts African Americans in Georgia economically, but this is all about voter and enfranchisement. And to go back to what you said a few minutes ago, there could be nothing more frustrating than thinking that your legitimately cast ballot, where you went into your polling center and you showed your ID and you made sure that you were registered to vote, that that vote could be canceled out right. by maybe mass mail-in ballots from people who you don't even know if they showed ID.
Exactly. So
voter integrity laws are about ensuring voter integrity. And if you can vote without even using an ID, but using the last four digits of your social security number
right.
or a paycheck stub or a utility or bank statement, I mean, come on, that's restrictive?
No, this is
political propagandizing, and shame on baseball.
Yeah, I've had to take a short break. Before I do, though, in just a minute, the CEOs of all these major companies, what came out of that gathering? What do they plan to do now?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know. Coca-Cola, some of these other companies, and they succumb to pressure and intimidation from political groups. And what we're talking about right here now, this has to deal with voting in Georgia, but you and I have seen this a million times with the LGBTQ lobby and the NCAA and Indianapolis, Indiana, right? What happened a few years ago with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So a lot of this is what happens in this modern day of social media and cancel culture. Once they start working on you online and these social media platforms, these companies, man, they fold quicker than a chair at a ballpark.
I love that. All right, Doctor, hold the thought. When we come back, I want to talk about the future of the Supreme Court. You know, we know Justice Stephen Breyer warned against the idea of packing the court. Immediate backlash for people calling him to resign. Let's take a look at the Supreme Court. And even the idea of Joe Biden wanting to send more of your taxpayer dollars so people won't come to our border. You may not have heard that story. I'll fill you in. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show is here for you
right here.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining us. It is a delight to be here with you. Just a very quick programming note for you. If you're just joining me, Dr. Paul Kengor and I are talking a little bit about voting rights. I know you're probably thinking, hey, the election's over. Why are you talking about that? Well, you probably have heard what went down in Georgia. In fact, Dr. Kengor wrote an article. It's called When Politics Poisons Everything, Including Baseball. That's the headline. And Jake, during the break, posted it on Twitter. So you can link right over. You'll find it at the National Catholic Register. And it is a good read. It's an example of how poisonous politics can become. And Dr. Kengor makes, he points that out. One of the great points, Doctor, that you made out was that the Major League Baseball actually believes in IDs too, right? When you go to pick up your tickets or buy a beer, as you point out in your article, you got to show an ID, right? But you don't need it to vote. Kind of wacky.
That's exactly right. And also, too, I guarantee you that if you did some kind of a ranking of all 50 states to find out which have the most restrictive voter ID laws, I mean, Drew, in our home state of Pennsylvania, I think our laws are probably more restrictive than Georgia right now. And if that's the case, why isn't Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, boycotting the Pittsburgh Pirates and Philadelphia Phillies, right? Yeah. And by the way, can I say that definitively? I don't know. He doesn't know either. I mean, you'd have to hire a think tank or, you know, the Rand Institute or so, you know, somebody to sit down and do some sort of giant spreadsheet based on all the different laws at all the different states and come up with a ranking system of 1 to 50 to see who's more restrictive than others. You probably have California and New York and some of the others up top. Who knows? And the fact is, Manfred doesn't know. He doesn't know. He doesn't have any idea. You know, the expert of these guys is balls and strikes, right? You know, not ballot boxes. They shouldn't be involved in this. So yeah, I quote in the article that I wrote for National Catholic Register, 2 Timothy from the New Testament, and it warns about false teachers, and it says how in the last days people will become, quote, self-centered, haughty, abusive, callous, implacable, slanderous, licentious, wow. brutal, wow. hating what is good, and, quote, always trying to learn but never able to reach a knowledge of the truth, unquote. Wow. And I feel like, bigger picture, that's where we are in America today, right? Every day we wake up and we try to figure out what's really the truth, what's really going on, but all it is people screaming at each other, attacking each other, being abusive, being yeah. nasty, being brutal, hating each other. And, you know, I think we're fully ensconced in what Benedict XVI called the dictatorship of relativism. It's a train wreck. It's a truth. Modern America has become a really vicious, divided place yeah. where people are pitted against one another. The country is on fire. Yeah. And sounds like today, maybe again in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, Doctor, what's
going on there right now?
What was that? Is 1 Timothy what? What was that you had? You quoted?
It's second Timothy. And I think it's 2 wow. Timothy 3.
I got to look it up. That's a great quote. Oh, my gosh. You couldn't.
Isn't it? Yeah, people will be abusive, callous, slanderous, wow. hating what is good, and, quote, always trying to learn but never able to reach a knowledge of the truth, unquote. And it says this will happen in the last days, wow. the last days, right? Beware of false teaching and false yeah. teachers. And you and I have talked about this before, Drew, right? Yeah. Getting up in the morning, looking at 20 different websites, trying to figure out what the truth is on a story, right? Is CNN telling us everything here? Is Fox telling us everything here? Oh, here's the latest on the Derek Chauvin trial. Is this accurate? Is that accurate? Is this the full thing? Is this not the full thing? What really happened here? What didn't happen here? It's just such a sad situation, not just in the country, in the culture, but even with the church.
I say it right. I say it a lot, Doctor. I mean, being a surveyor of all things that are both cultural, political, in the church, it is an amazing time in which we live where what is clearly wrong is now being advanced and championed as being a good or being right. I mean, we live in a very distorted time, and that scripture quote is haunting. I often think of St. Faustina too. And again, look, nobody knows the day or the hour, right? We do not know the day or the hour, but he did tell St. Faustina, he says, before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful savior. And woe to those of you who do not recognize this time of my visitation. And many people believe we are in a time of God's mercy. That's why we have this proliferation of apparitions taking place around the world, these Eucharistic miracles, all of these different events to get our attention, to draw us back to God. Yet if we reject God, if we reject the signs and the modern day prophets, then we have no one to blame but ourselves when we begin to experience God's justice. Just on a spiritual perspective here, outside of the political, where do you see us? I mean, you're a good Catholic guy as well. We were talking about Divine Mercy Sunday, how you celebrate it, and I mean, where do you see us today in terms of, you know, the lack of rationality, the rise of evil, the acceptance of this type of stuff?
Yeah. You and I both have written about Faustina, the Divine Mercy message, and, you know, here we are the day after that, after that weekend. And I often go to her diary, and I have the sections flagged about the last days, right? And there are many warnings in there. She died in 1938 at the age of 33, warning that the world was going to need an ocean of mercy. And 1 year after she died, and it was September, October 1938, 1 year after she died, the Nazis invaded Poland, and World War II started. And now here we are. She was named by John Paul II as the first saint of the new millennium, and Pope Francis declared a year of mercy. I mean, you can see. I mean, of course we know, right? No one knows when the last day will come, and you know, no one knows when the final hours will come. But you do see things going on today, where it just seems like I mean, I don't know, right? We don't know if we're in those final days or not. But I just can't think of a time when it seems worse. And I know people, especially historians, will say, "Oh, come on! I could pick out times where the world was at war, people were killing." I know, but never before in history has the truth seemed so questioned and up in the air, where people are redefining everything from
life in the womb to marriage to even what gender they are, right? I mean, never before in history did people think that there could be 71 different gender options that an individual could choose from, right? The chaos just seems worse now than any time ever before in history, I think.
Yeah, it's always darkest before the dawn, though. I mean, I'm glad you and I haven't chosen to live in this time, as strange as it is, and I'm glad you're able to teach and form the next generation. I'm glad you're here to share with me every day or throughout the months, if you will, to get perspective. And we'll get through it. Let's pray, and let's be witnesses, yeah. And let's bring Christ to the world. That's the answer. Hey, Doctor, thank you for being here with me today. Always a delight to have you, and appreciate your work. We linked over to it. We'll have to have you back. There's a lot of stuff we did not get to, like Joe Biden proposing that we pay migrants to stay away. I don't think that would fly. And, of course, the Supreme Court we didn't get a chance to talk about, but I'd love to do that with you maybe later in the week. So we'll catch up again, okay?
Sounds good, Drew. It's the hour of mercy here, 3 o'clock in Western Pennsylvania. And I think maybe I'll finish this by going and doing my chaplet.
Amen. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm about to pray the chaplet right now with the nation, so I will remember your intentions along with mine, okay? So we'll be united in prayer. Appreciate it. Thank you. And say a prayer for Dr. Paul Kengor, okay? Good man, beautiful family that he has, and a wonderful writer. Just do a quick search for his name, Kengor, and you can see all the books that he has written, and I appreciate his perspective and his position. If you want to join me for the chaplet, let's pray. Let's do that. Let's pray for our country. You know, we're not today. If you look at the events that unfold around this, it's easy to get down. You see rioting in the streets. You see this radical influence in our government. You see where we're heading, this rejection of God, this acceptance of all things that seem wrong and evil. It's easy to get despondent, but I'm a man of great hope, and there is a brighter future for all of us. You and I have been chosen to live today. Let's pray. Let's fast. Let's sacrifice. Let's be a witness for Christ. Let's change the world. All right? We can do that together. Take a short pause. We'll pray when I return.